Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Royal Priesthood Nation call, and your host tonight will be, is Dr. Hapi and Dr. Khalif Zefnef Pahaniel. And welcome to our show. And we have a very wonderful special guest tonight. His name is Jordan Maxwell. Jordan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh,
can you hear me? Can you hear me, though?
Yes, we can hear you. Wow,
okay,
yes, we can.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is because I've got a new phone.
Ooh, you're kind of breaking up on us there. I'd like to introduce you, Jordan, before we get into the call tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. Let me leave that. Jordan Maxwell is a preeminent researcher and independent scholar in the field of occult and religious philosophy. His interest in these subjects began as far back as 1959. He served for 3.5 years as the religion editor of True Seekers magazine, and it's one of the oldest free thought journals since 1873. His work exploring the hidden foundations of Western religion and secret societies creates enthusiastic responses from audiences around the world. And folks, he is renowned around the world for his knowledge. He has conducted dozens of intensive seminars, hosted his own radio talk shows, guested on more than 600 radio shows. His work on subjects of secret societies, both ancient and modern, and their symbols has fascinated audiences around the world. And with that, I welcome everyone, Jordan Maxwell.
Well,
Dr. Khalif, are you with
much.
Us?
Well, at least I'm here.
Well, I think. Wow.
So at least the two of us are here.
Yes, Dr. Khalif is here too.
Okay. The reason I was asking about if you could hear me, because it's a new set of headphones, and I'm not really sure what I'm doing, so I was hoping that was working.
You actually sound quite good there. You were making some adjustments. This is the engineer live, folks. Please forgive me, but I am cutting in here just to help make some adjustments here. Mr. Maxwell, you're making the right adjustments. You were a little fuzzy there, but you sounded real good for the last second or two. There we go. You might want to make a few more adjustments because it's rattling.
Well, I don't know what I can do if it's going to help me. I'm doing the best I can.
We'll get through it. You're doing well. And off with the program.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Technology.
All right, Jordan, are you there with us now?
Yes.
Are you hearing me now?
Us?
Yes, you're coming in good.
Okay.
Dr. Khalif. Wow. Okay, I'm missing part of the team here.
Where do we start on such a subject?
Yeah, exactly. Where do we start?
Why don't we talk about
the religious aspect of things to start with?
Well, first of all, when you're looking at the things which are going on in the Middle East today, you have to realize, if you want to try and understand what's going on, you have to realize that the Middle East has thousands and thousands of years of history that has brought us to where we are today. So, it's nothing
Jordan,
new
I need to
going
you there,
on.
But your mic is real. Your method of communication there, those headphones or whatever, are really, really distorted right now.
Yeah, it's the microphone on your headset somehow. The proximity.
Let's see. Maybe I can do something about that. Possibly, I don't know.
Yeah. Are you on a wireless router?
Yes.
Okay, closer to the router. The wavering dynamics usually occur.
Okay, hold on. Let's see if this works better. I'm going to try something.
Okay, sir.
Give me a moment.
Okay.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Oh, now that's clear, yeah.
Can you hear me?
Well, now you're starting to sound like the crooner. You are. I love it. Yes, sir. You sound fabulous.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? One, two, three. I do hear you.
I tried to do the best I could.
I do hear you, and you are sounding fantastic. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? I hear you. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
No.
I do hear you. I'm hearing you quite well, actually. I'm not quite sure what to do. I hope you're moving around the studio, in your personal studio, getting things squared away.
Okay, can you hear me now?
I hear you now, yes, sir.
Well, you know, I had all kinds of great equipment that was very good and good connections and everything, but it was all stolen from me, so I have to do what I can now until I can get the, you know, get my good stuff back. It was stolen.
You're doing excellent. If you can hear me right now, you're doing just perfect.
Well, let's hope it'll continue.
All right, and we are continuing on with the program. Thanks, folks, for bearing with us. It's always fun and a challenge. That's what makes it interesting. So, again, enjoy the program.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Anytime you're alive, you're going to have problems with it. But that's the technology for today, you know.
Absolutely.
So, anyway, what I was saying is that the Middle East has got a very ancient history, and there's nothing new under the sun, nothing new going on in the Middle East. It's same old story, different day. And the reason why you're having so many problems in the Middle East is because so much is lying. There's so many lies being told and deception. And so you're never going to have peace where you're having lies and deception and trickery. You're never going to have peace. Because there's a lot of people who know what these lies are, and they're not buying it. And so that's why we are having the problems we are. We are living in a world that's filled with lies, deception. So unfortunately, that's the world we live in. So I don't know where we can go with that. Excuse me. What I would ask you, now you're hearing me all right now, are you?
Yes, Jordan, you're coming across fantastic now.
Okay. I would ask you a question first, and that is, how important is it to tell people the truth, the provable, factual, legitimate truth? How important do you think it really is to tell people the truth? How important do you think it is that they actually know the truth about anything? It's a very legitimate question.
It is.
I mean, what do you think?
I think it's so important that it has to do with our ascension process.
Yeah, well, of course. It has to do with your life also, because if you're believing a lie and you're basing your whole life on a lie, then, you know, then you are building your house on sand that's going to fall apart one day.
It destroys your DNA, too, living a lie.
That's exactly right. And I've said this before. Maybe you've heard it. I'll say it again. If you have a two-story building and you're going to put a lot of weight on the second floor, like printing presses and some heavy equipment on the second floor, the first thing to do is to go downstairs and get on a ladder with a building inspector and remove the ceiling tiles from downstairs and examine the foundation of that floor to see if it's going to hold that kind of weight. Well, what you're doing is you're standing under the foundation you're going to build on. And that's where we get the word understanding. So if you don't understand, because you're not standing under the subject. So people are looking at subjects every day. They have no idea in the world the history of anything. They don't know what the words mean. They have no idea who the people are who are running the planet. what the symbols mean. It's everything is right around you, but people don't know, so they are confused. And that's why today you will have on television and radio and newspapers and all kinds of articles. And everybody's got a different viewpoint, but anybody with a half a brain knows that there's got to be one legitimate truth. And it doesn't seem like anybody has it, but there has to be some kind of a legitimate, de jure, real, factual truth going on the earth. But nobody seems to have it. Everybody's got a different opinion as to what's going on. So I'm just saying that that's what you have to do. If you're going to try and understand something, you need to go beneath the subject and do some background check on the words, the terms, and who these people are, and what they're doing, and where they've come from, and what's the history for the past 5,000 years in that particular area of the world. And another thing is, and keeping with that same kind of symbolism, if you were going to ship a box across country, you go into the garage and you find some rope and cord and you tie the box up, and that should be sufficient. But if you're going to take that same rope and walk out to the edge of a 10-story building and tie it off and hang on it, now your life depends, and you're hanging your life on the integrity of that rope. So you better find out what, you know, if that rope's going to hold before you go hanging your life on it. The same thing is true with your knowledge. If you don't know what you're doing, if you have no idea what the words mean, what the history of a place is, who the people are that are running the country, don't hang your life on something. Don't hang your life on CNN and NBC and all the major media. They're not telling you the truth. They never have told you the truth, and they don't intend to. So don't hang your life on it, and don't bet on anything you hear on the news at all, because it's probably a lie anyway. And so that's a good start. Just assume that 99% of everything you hear, especially in America, is a lie. It's a distortion. It's a lie. It's a ruse. So that's why we have so much turmoil and so much hatred and turmoil and bloodshed in our country, because nobody really knows what's going on, and everybody's frustrated and angry and mad at each other. So unfortunately, that's the world we live in right now. And
Jordan,
of course, that's,
would you care to maybe elaborate some on the symbolism and significance of this new terrorist organization called ISIS or ISIL?
You know, I don't think I have enough information on that, because it's kind of new. But and besides, I really want to try and stay away from the politics of the moment, because that's not really something I'm interested in anymore. Many years ago, I was very interested to, I was very zealous in trying to warn people about the secret societies and all the occult symbolism and all the hidden words and terms and symbols and commercial terms and all of that kind of thing. Because I've always had a gift of pattern recognition. And so it's been very easy for me to see patterns in symbolism, words and terms that people use. but I'm not really interested to talk about modern day politics anymore, because for me it's very dangerous. It's very, very dangerous, you know, because I've been warned by, I've already had the 3 o'clock knocks on the door by federal agents. I've already been, you know, called before federal agencies and, you know, basically explaining to me, you better keep your mouth shut. And so I know that they know that I know what they're doing, and I'm not about to talk about it in public, because I take that threat seriously, you know.
Well, that just lets
you. Well, I'm certainly glad to have you. Let me introduce myself to you.
Yes,
I am the host of this call, Jordan. I've watched you and listened to you for a number of years, and it is absolutely a delight to have you, to listen to you. live and in person for the very first time for me.
Thank you, sir.
And I am the host of the Royal Priesthood Bible Prayer and Fellowship Live for the last 3.5 years. And listening to you these years talk about all of the subject matters that you've covered has been exciting. It has been liberating. Liberating, exciting to the point of liberation in terms of knowing the truth. And some of the things that you said initially to me were offensive because of my religious conditioning, being a pastor of in the ministry in the Christian church for as leadership since 1975, and having pastored in 3 different states, two simultaneously for a number of years, and coming in contact with you was, should I say, a shock, a culture shock, or I don't know how you want to put it, but it rocked my world to listen to some of the things that you were talking about, and finally began my own personal journey in 2007. And I said, well, let me see if I can document some of these things myself. And so I started. And so here we are. And as a professional churchman myself, can you talk about church and the Bible and
how we got the New Testament
and what the etymology of the word church is? I've heard you do this before.
Yeah,
is that something safe for you to talk about?
You want to get me started on theology and religion, I can talk all night, because that's always been my
favorite
subject
anyway.
That's
what this line is all about. Because my assignment is to try to build a bridge for people that have been deceived by religion. I came in on the conversation a little late because I was trying to get my board up, and I couldn't. And I had told Aladia Midwest to take the line and introduce you. And I heard you guys talking about the harmful, how harmful lies are. And I heard you ask the question, how important is it to know the truth?
Yes.
Well, it is superlative. Nothing is more important than knowing the truth, and you all have covered, because it does harm. We have studies now that show that lies cause harm to us, not only spiritually, not only mentally and emotionally, but physiologically. Mm-hmm. They have an impact upon us. And one of the reasons that we've been told lies is primarily, in my opinion, and according to the Bible, to keep us enslaved. You cannot keep people enslaved who know the truth.
That's
truth
right.
is liberating. So how important is the truth? Well, it brings health. It brings your mental, emotional, physical, spiritual health to a place of liberation and emancipation. And how important, what kind of price tag can you put on that? So having said that, could you tell us what is the etymology and how did we get the word church? Many people don't even know how we got the word church.
Well, I know many people talk in churches talk about Jesus Christ and have no idea in the world where the name Jesus came from, nor what the word Christ means. They have no idea in the world what the word church means, as you said, and and the basis for the Christian religion. Because today, I mean, I don't even know where to start, because this is a subject I've been looking at for over 50 years. And I'm very interested in spirituality. I have no problem believing in God. I there's no doubt in my mind that there's a higher divine presence in the universe. I call it a divine presence rather than God, because the word God has been used so much, and there's so many things that that people talk about God. But there is something in this universe that is far, far wiser and more powerful than we are, and it controls in our destiny and our lives, and I know that. So I have no problem in believing in God, so to speak, and in Holy Scripture, I have no problem with that. My problem is, what have we done as humans to the divine presence? What have we done to religion and and theology? There's so much I'd like to say on that subject, and I don't even know where to start exactly. First of all, let me go back to why the question I ask is to how important is it to know the truth? Because the Apostle Paul met a lot of opposition and became very unpopular. And he said in the scriptures, have I become your enemy because I tell you the truth? Well, in point of fact, yes. You can make a lot of enemies telling people the truth. Because, and I give you an example, if you love country western music, you're not going to pay $50 to go to an acid rock concert. If you like opera, you're not going to pay $50 to go to a rock and roll concert. So people will always pay money and support what they want to hear. You will not spend money on a restaurant that you don't like. You want to eat where you want to eat, and you will spend money on the clothes you want to wear, not on something you don't want to wear. So everybody has a different taste, and so people will spend money and support what they want to wear, to eat, to listen to. So the point being is that people will support what they want. Well, the one thing that history has taught us in the past 7,000 years, we have learned one thing, that generally speaking, people do not want and will not support and are not interested at all in hearing the truth. They don't want the truth. There's a story in the Bible about Jesus that says that the governor in the city called the city together. This is in the scriptures in the New Testament, that the governor called the city together, and everyone in town came, and he said to the town, to the people of the town, according to your custom, I can release one prisoner each year to you. So today is that day, and I will release one prisoner today to you. On my left, I have a man, Barabbas, who everybody knows is a criminal from day one. There's nothing of any intrinsic value in him at all. He's a common criminal, Barabbas. On the other hand, I have Jesus, who the scripture says is the truth and the light. He brings the truth and the light to the world. So I have two people here, Barabbas and Jesus. Which one do you wish? Which one do you want? And the scripture says that with one voice, the whole town agreed. Give us Barabbas. That is a very powerful metaphor. It's a symbolic metaphor that's telling you something. It's telling you that when people of the town or the state or the country, when the people of the world are given an opportunity to choose between a criminal, a liar, a thief, a known criminal, or someone who's bringing you the truth and the light, the scripture said the whole town said, give us Barabbas. The meaning of that was people don't want the truth and the light. Give us Barabbas. We know he's a murderer. We know he's a criminal. We don't care.
Jordan?
Yes.
Your mic is distorting again.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now what about this one? How about now?
Okay, it's clear. Go ahead.
Okay.
You're making a tremendous point. Go ahead.
Is it all right now?
No, it's still coming in like you're talking through a tin can.
Right. Yeah, I know. Well, it's really too bad because I need better equipment. I need to be connected to the source, and I'm not. So I don't know. Suppose if we could maybe put this on hold.
But if you did that pitch and that volume, I think you should be okay. Try that pitch and volume. We hear you clearly.
Okay, well, I just dropped the volume down a little bit. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, sir. Continue.
Okay. Anyway, did you get the better part of what I was saying about?
Yes, we got the part that you said people do not want truth. They made a decision to have Barabbas instead of the truth and the light.
That's right. Exactly.
That's what I'm saying today. Contemporary. Now, even now, it continues.
That's right. People do not want to hear the truth. They want to support with money and what they want to hear, not what they don't want to hear. And the one thing they
allow me to interject what I was told just a few days ago, a few weeks ago, by a gentleman that sat in my home who had done some work for us after we had completed one of our events. He said, well, it's not a matter of truth. You need to know that it's not a matter of truth. It's a matter of money. We know, and this is what I was told. I was told this by several people. We know what you're saying is true, but we have, one, come too far, and we can't turn around. Two, we know what you're saying is true, but this is how we make our living.
Well, I know.
It's not about truth. It's about money. So what we have is, one, we have people that are ignorant. And just plain asleep. They just don't know. Two, we have people that are so afraid, they are simply afraid, Jordan. If I may call you Jordan, may I?
Yeah.
And
no,
three,
I have exactly people
who are not ignorant, but they have sold out, especially our leaders. And they know the truth, but they have sold out. And they will sell the truth and sell the people who need the truth so that they themselves can continue in their life and lifestyle. So truth now becomes a matter of economics.
Well, that's what I ask you. How important is it to tell people the truth?
Because most people don't want to hear the truth.
They may already know it. They just don't want to hear it. Makes them very uncomfortable to talk about something they already know is true, and they're trying to forget about it and move on because it's their livelihood. So that's what I'm saying. How important is it to tell people the truth? So it's always been a problem.
Well, Jesus, Jordan, you mentioned Jesus. You mentioned Jesus, and your mic is still acting up a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, tell us a little bit about how we got the Jesus of the New Testament.
Well, I believe that Jesus is a metaphor, a symbolic metaphor. And there's you've heard of the Bible codes. We've heard all kinds of stories about Bible codes, and they make television shows on the Bible codes. Well, it's true that there are many codes. The Jews, the rabbis
will tell you there's about seven different codes in the Old Testament.
But only the rabbis are aware. Most Jews are not aware that there's at least seven different codes in the Old Testament.
the entire New Testament itself is an encoded story.
It's a code. And if you don't understand the terms and the symbols and the code, then you're never going to understand the story. And so that's why the Bible has Jesus saying, many will look with their eyes, but not see. And they'll listen with their ears, but not hear. And with the heart, they don't get the sense of it. So people are reading the Bible, they're going to church, they're hearing all kinds of things, they're seeing all kinds of things, they're reading the Bible, but with their heart, they don't get the sense of it. And the reason why is because it's an encoded message. And the whole New Testament story of Jesus is a symbolic story, telling you something right in your face, but you don't see it. So that's
what
I'm
now, trying to tell. Now, what is that code? Give us an example of the code and what it is telling us in our faith.
All right. Once you see the pieces of the code, once you see the pieces on the board when you're playing a game, once you understand how the game is played on the board, then it begins to make sense to you. So the bottom line on Christianity is telling an encoded story. About old Testament. That's what the old. The Bible is called the greatest story ever told. And well, of course, it's the greatest story ever told. It's the oldest story that's ever been told. It's a symbolic story of the war that's going on in the universe. A symbolic story about the war between light and darkness. Because thousands and thousands of years ago, we're talking about 6, 7, 9, 10,000 years ago, the human family on the earth lived in a very different kind of world that we do today. It was very frightening to the ancient peoples of the world when the sun went down. When the sun went down, it became very cold, and predator animals came out. And it was very frightening and very dangerous to be around as a human with the animals roaming around at night. And so darkness was a frightening thing to the ancient peoples of the world.
I hate to break in, but they're not letting you know that your line's bugging out continuously. And I'm not sure. I wish they'd kind of let you know when those things are fuzzing about. It is. You might want to adjust yourself just a bit. It's breaking up consistently.
I'm looking at everything.
Yes, you are breaking up really badly, Jordan. We were trying to fight through that. We do apologize.
No, that's okay. For those of you on the line,
we are hearing every other word.
Well, look at perhaps what we should do is cancel the show today.
You can't take some adjustments where you are.
Yeah, maybe what we should do is cancel the show for today, and we will set it up for later. And let me get better equipment and get this straightened out, because I don't want to continue if we're not hearing it correctly.
Well, it's okay.
No, you're not coming through. You're not coming through. You're breaking up. So let me just say this, and I'm going to open up for some questions and answers here while we are still on the radio. And yes. I'm going to do my best to try to fill in with some of the things that I've been teaching here recently and some of the discoveries that I've made. And I don't like to say things that I can't document and I can't prove. And if I do tell you a lie, as Dr. Blair so often says, who is our elder in this room, and Dr. Prince and others, it's not because I intended to lie to you. I just didn't know. And if you catch me lying to you, please bring me information so we both can be correct, and not only just yourself be correct, because that is my goal. I'm in a desperate pursuit of truth at all costs. Now, one of the things that I've discovered is that the etymology of the name Jesus, or with the J, and in my book I address this, that the J has a relatively young existence in terms of world history. The J sound did not even come into literature. English literature until about 400 years ago. The sound itself, and once you understand these energies and sound and everything is, well, in the beginning was the word. And word is sound, and sound creates frequency, and frequency creates form. And form is what we experience. So it all has its origin in words. And as he was saying a moment ago, if you don't understand words, you really don't understand your existence. You don't understand your experience. Because if you back it up from your form or experience, from frequency to sound, to the word. The word says, in the beginning was the word. And that word created a sound. That sound created a vibration or a frequency. And that frequency creates form. And so that is our experience. So to understand words is vitally important. Now, as it relates to this word Jesus being relatively young, and only existing, there was no person. It is impossible with this formula that we are discussing now. It is impossible to have had a person named Jesus 2,000 years ago. It just is impossible. Now, what does that actually mean? That means that there was no word, there was no sound, there was no frequency, there was no form, there was no person named Jesus 2,000 years ago. Why? Because the J did not exist. There was no energy. The sound was not even present. The J was formed and created about 400 years ago, and it was created for the purposes of deception. It was created for even the King James, original King James Version. You can get this. Don't take my word for it. You can get a copy of the original 400-year anniversary edition of King James Version, and it has absolutely not one single solitary J in the entire text. Not one. Because it did not exist. So there was no energy. There was no form. There was no frequency. There was no vibration. There was no sound. There was no word, Jesus, 2,000 years ago. Now, that means that there was no force. Now, that's just a simple look at words. Historically, as we look at this, as Mr. Maxwell has pointed out, this story is a repetitive story throughout antiquity that has been told in just about every culture. And he was explaining to you a moment ago a portion of that story that comes out of Kemet, out of what we call Egypt, about the setting of the sun, Set, and Osiris, brothers, Set, the sun, Horus. We get the word horizon. We get the word hour from the word Horus. We have these words, and this story is told in Egypt concerning Horus. Horus is said to have had 12 followers. He's said to have been baptized by Anup. Anup was beheaded. The story, there are so many parallels. I could go on and on and on and on and on. Horus was born of a virgin. The virgin birth is not a new story. It's an ancient story told of in many cultures, told of Vishnu, told of Mithra, told of in Egypt concerning Isis and Horus. This is an old story that has been changed and that has been convoluted and passed down to us. But the people who originally, especially in Kemet in Egypt, knew that these were allegories. They knew that they told these stories so that the people who listened to those stories would get the principles that were behind these stories. My mother used to say to me, it's your little red wagon. You can push it or you can pull it. Now, if I go out and get a little red wagon and take her literally and I start saying to everyone, I'm pushing and pulling my little red wagon because my mother told me that. You ask my mother, what is he doing? She said, well, she would probably say something like, he missed the forest for the trees. I didn't intend for him to go and literally get a little red wagon. I was emphasizing a point to him, and that point was you can make life hard or you can make it easy. But I gave him a concrete illustration to demonstrate an abstract principle so that it would stick in his mind. So I gave him a picture because the brain is that kind of organ. Once you give an image, the brain retains that. And as a matter of fact, the brain retains what we give it anyway, but images stick. And this is one of the reasons I don't want to get into that, that makes television dangerous. And the more television you watch, the more you're being brainwashed. And I'll say this parenthetically as we move to our discussion, is that the television was initially created as a weapon in 1925. And the first broadcast that was broadcast, I believe, from New York to, from D.C. to New York, and Herbert J. Hoover, who was then the Secretary of Commerce, not the director of the FBI, did the first broadcast in 1925. So the images that and the allegory pictures that were used, especially of the Meta, the what so-called gods of Egypt, and then we're talking in particular about this story. Now let me give you couple of examples that I've found concerning Jesus. In the Gospel according to Matthew, I believe around chapter 2, it states that, I think around verse number 23, it says something like, and he came and he dwelt in a city called Nazareth, and it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet, he shall be called a Nazarene. Well, now, what prophet said this? Because it says clearly here that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophets. Interestingly, there is no mention of a place called Nazareth in the Old Testament. No prophet ever used the word Nazareth. Not one time. That presents a tremendous problem for biblicists and theologians. Now, they can skirt around it with notions and ideas and seminary formulas and what they call apologetics or defenses, but at the end of the day, there is no place in the Old Testament called Nazareth. You can look for it. It doesn't exist. It's not there. So what are you going to do with this verse that says that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet? If you can't find a prophet whose lips are using the word Nazareth in the Old Testament, you have a tremendous problem with Matthew 2 and 23. Another thing that I found, it says in the epistle of John, it says, no man had seen God at any time. No man had seen God at any time. But now, Jacob, Moses, Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, four people, and 70 elders said that they saw the God of Israel. But yet John says, who is allegedly a Hebrew of Hebrew descent, and I am stretched to believe that he was not aware of the Hebrew scriptures, where Moses had said, along with Nadab, Abihu, Aaron, and 70 elders, that they saw the living God. Not only did they see him, they said that they sat down and ate with him. But yet John, in his epistle, says no man has seen God at any time. Now, then Jacob, in the book of Genesis, chapter 32, and verse 30, says that he had seen God face to face. Now, who is right, Jacob or John? It's the difference between seeing or not seeing. So now what do we do with these things? And there are many, many other things, other symbolism. The Bible is a book of codes, and it is a book of not only codes, but a book of principles that are hidden in these cults. Here's an example. Christ of Scripture lived 33 years, and he was crucified at a place called the skull. Well, you have 33 vertebrae in your spine that end, or begin, rather, or end, whichever way you want to look at it. You have 33. But if you're coming from the base of the spine upward, it ends at the skull. Well, Christ lived 33 years, and he was crucified at a place called the skull. Now, you have to do something with that correlation. You have to dismiss it as coincidence, or you have to give critical thought to it and process it to see if there's some principle here by which must be applied. Another thing that we see concerning the scripture is that the two most significant events in our existence, birth and death, and notice what I said, they are events, birth and death, are simply events that happen inside of our life, birth, because life conceptually does not start when we have a physical body, but we are spirits. How do we know this? Because when we leave this life in what we call the event of death, our bodies remain here, but we are no longer there. Something has happened to our memory, our experiences, our capacities, our mind. Where did that go? Where did that energy go? Did it evaporate? Did it go into nothingness? No, it did not. Death and life are just events. Now, we have been conditioned, unfortunately, to believe in some erroneous doctrines that have been forced upon us by the Romans, particularly Constantine at the Council of Nicaea, who decided what books would not be included, what books would, and what books would not be included inside of what we call the canon, or the collection of writings that we call the Bible. And my question to that is, by what authority did he take as a Roman, even with biblical precedent, to decide which books would be permissible as far as being in the canon? And then yet the Roman church itself holds within its vaults, underneath the Vatican, books that are not to be published. So we have here many stories concerning this. Now, the event of life, of birth and death, notice, if you will, that two people are present during the birth of Christ that are dominant characters, Mary and Joseph, two characters. At the major, one of the major events in life, birth. Mary and Joseph are present as major characters. Now watch this. At his death, the next major event in life, birth and death, who's present? Mary and Joseph. Now, the laws of probability, this is a long shot. This is up for argument. And I really can't stress this too hard, but I'm just making a point. There's a Mary and a Joseph, Joseph of Arimathea, is present at his death, and Mary Magdalene is present at his death, along with some other Marys. But you have Joseph, and now what are the probability of a Mary and a Joseph as dominant characters being present at your birth and being present at the other event, your death? Highly improbable. Now, there are many, many, many other correlations, but the Bible is not only full of codes. The Bible is full of cosmology. The Bible is full of cosmic principles. The Bible is full of astrological and astronomical codes. It's full of numerological codes, numbers. It's full of many, many different kinds of codes. For an example, a numerological code, 666, the number of the beast in Revelation 13. 6 plus 6 is 12, plus 6 is 18. And the law of numerology is that there can only be one, because there are only 9 numbers in a 10-base number system. So 6 plus 6 plus 6 is 18, and 1 plus 8 is 9. Now watch this, 144, which is the number of man, Revelation 21:17. The measure of a man is 144. 1 plus 4 is 5, plus 4 is 9. So you have the number of man and the number of the measure of man, both equaling 9, code. It's a code. What does it have to do with? Interestingly enough, that number 9 ties into cosmology. It ties into many, many, many principles. It ties into the diameter of the moon. The moon width, rather, not diameter, the moon's width is 2,160 miles across. 2 plus 1 is 3, plus 6 is 9. It also ties into the base of the sun's diameter. The base of the sun's diameter, 2, 1, 6, 0. What else does it tie into? It ties into the fact of the precession of the sun through the constellations. The sun stays and rises and sets in one constellation exactly. It's like a clock. It stays there in one constellation, for an example, the constellation, let's say, of Aquarius. Well, the sun rises and sets in that constellation exactly 2,160 years. 2,160 years. 2 plus 1 plus 6 equals 9. So now this number in the Bible, 666 and 144, ties man into, if the measure of man is 144, and that comes out 9, it ties him directly into the sun and into the moon. So there's a cosmological code that has something to do with the biology of man. So these are codes, numerological codes, astronomical codes that we have found that are empirical. They are empirical. 9 has to do with your frequency of your DNA. You can ask any physicist. 9 has to do. Ask any biologist. That, and this can be documented. You don't have to take my word or anyone's word for it. If you are tied to the cosmos, whether you like it or not, the energies and the frequencies and the vibrations of the cosmos have a direct play on your DNA, because DNA, the amino acids and the protein, they have frequency, and these frequencies travel throughout to the utmost reaches of the universe and through the dimensions. Everything is frequency. So these are codes. These are literal codes. We could go on. I could go on and on and on with these codes. Numbers chapter 2 talks about the tribes of Israel. Israel, as they pitched their camp in the wilderness, there were 3 tribes in the north, 3 tribes in the east, 3 tribes in the south, 3 tribes in the west. They were positioned according to the fixed points of the constellations. And what are those fixed points? I said this a few weeks ago. They were Leo, Sagittarius, Scorpio, and Taurus were the fixed points. And it goes on to tell you that the tribe of Judah, or Yehuda, was to pitch their tents toward the rising of the sun. There it is right there, the sun, cosmology. There it is right there, the cosmos, the constellation, the sun. And verse number 9 in chapter 2 of the book of Numbers said that there were 186,400 in that camp, pitched their tents toward the rising of the sun. Now, anyone will tell you, if they've studied, been around the lab any amount of time, and know anything about the speed of light, that is a reference to the constant speed of light per second. 186,400 miles a second is the constant speed of light. So you cannot get away from these codes. They are there. You have seven nerve centers or energy centers or chakras, if we call them, in your body. Well, where are they? They're in your spine. Where's your spine? In your back. Well, the book of Revelations, chapter 5, says that there's a book that's written within, sealed on the back side with seven seals. Here it is again, another correlation. These are things that you have to do something with. These are facts that you have to do something with. So having said that, it's almost 8. We're about 3 minutes to the hour. I'm going to shut down right there, and hopefully we can get Jordan rescheduled. I could go on. I wanted to talk more about the pineal gland, Matthew chapter 6, verse 22. And I wanted him to tell us how we got our Bible, who wrote it, and how they extrapolated. The Bible is an extrapolated document, taken from other documents, taken from other cultures, mixed in with a little bit of history, to make it look real, to make the story come to life. But that was an argument, as I close this, that was an argument that took place between a man named Arius of Libya and the Council of Nicaea when they were attempting to make this story, as we've said, a legitimate story. And this guy named Arius, who was a bishop, he came in and he said, you cannot make this person a real person that you are trying to make, meaning Jesus Christ. You cannot. Constantine said, oh, yes, I can. I'm the emperor. I have the Roman army behind me. I can kill you.
30 seconds.
And so he threatened Arius, and Arius went off and went into seclusion. He was banished from Constantinople, or from not Constantinople, excuse me. He was banished from the Council of Nicaea, and he was banished from the area. He went into Europe and went into seclusion. And that's where we get the term the Arians. The Arians, because of Arius. Now, he was a black man, and he argued vehemently with Constantine and his group. And they spent months there deciding what books would be allowed into the Bible. That is a historic fact. This is not fiction. You can search this out. You can find it for yourselves.